Call this, grab the microphone, sorry. We'll call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:04 p.m. Friday, March 19th, 2021. We have Representative Fields, Representative Kronk, Representative Schrage, Representative Gillen, Representative Hannon, Vice Chair Hopkins, myself, Representative Putkuduk, and Representative Welsh and Representative McKay are excused from the committee meeting today, and we have enough that constitutes quorum. I'd like to recognize and say thank you to our recording secretary, Robin, our LIO moderator, Alex, and Grace, and we also got Representative Story in the audience to speak to House Bill 115. Along with House Bill 115, on today's agenda, we'll be picking up House Bill 81 and the amendments for that. And I guess back to the discussion on 115, we'll provide the introduction of the bill and hear invited in public testimony. That's the first thing that we're going to do today. Sorry about that, Representative Hannon. So with that, House Bill 115, this is our first hearing on the bill. The plan is to hear it from the bill's sponsor, take invited testimony, and take public testimony. Representative Story, if you can introduce yourself and your staff, and the floor is yours for the presentation.
Thank you, Chair Putkuduk, and members of the House Resources Committee. For the record, Andrea Story here, and pleased to have Greg Smith, who works with me, talking about this bill today. House Bill 115 simplifies the Department of Natural Resources, DNR, their lease renewal process for aquatic farms, directly supporting Alaskan aquaculture businesses. Aquatic farm products include oysters, kelp, and other shellfish. This is an industry with substantial promise. In fact, the Alaska Mariculture Task Force sets a goal of making this industry a $100 million industry in the next 20 years. With Alaska's clean waters and immense coastline, we have bountiful potential for responsible development of this industry. I was pleased at how far this bill progressed last session, getting through the House to Senate Finance, its last committee of referral before COVID shortened our session. As some of you may remember from last session, there are many hurdles for business owners to overcome when operating a small mariculture enterprise. House, this bill addresses one obstacle. Specifically, it expedites the lease renewal process. In doing so, it lowers investment risk for these startup businesses and reduces the workload on an overstretched state agency, DNR, allowing the regulatory agency to process lease applications of all types more quickly. Due to recent state budget cuts and increases in aquatic farm lease applications, it's currently taking DNR 18 months or more to approve an initial or renewal aquatic farm lease. Yes, that's 1.5 years or more. This bill aligns aquatic farm lease renewals consistent with other DNR lease renewals, such as those for agricultural grazing, cabins and lodges, docks and hydroelectric facilities, who are allowed a streamlined renewal process. I want to mention that this bill does not affect salmon hatchery leases. This streamlined lease process allows the director of the Division of Mining, Land, and Water to renew a lease for a business in good standing and takes around 90 days. Including mariculture businesses that are in good standing to this list significantly shortens the renewal process while still allowing appropriate regulatory oversight, public engagement, and requests for appeal of any DNR lease renewal decision. The idea for this bill began shortly after I took office in 2019. I was contacted by a constituent who was in the process of transferring an aquatic farm lease. She shared her experiences and suggested changes that might help applicants. In subsequent conversations with DNR staff, they mentioned the streamlining of the aquatic farm renewal process as a way to reduce uncertainty for applicants and gain agency efficiency. Last session, when this bill was in Senate Finance, the committee made a few changes, and I've incorporated those in this bill. So those are changes from the first time some of you heard the bill. And the reporting requirements, what it added was reporting requirements, a section that explicitly allowed ecotourism and educational functions, and a section that prohibited charging access or transition fees. I felt they were good additions, and they are in this bill. I appreciate your consideration of the bill. It supports responsible resource development and the state's aquaculture businesses. So depending upon your wishes, Chair, and the committee, Greg Smith can walk you through the sectional analysis. There are invited testifiers online, and we are happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Representative Story. Greg?
Yes.
Floor is yours if you want to take us through the sectional analysis.
Very good. Thank you, Chair Putkatuk, Greg Smith, staff to Representative Story. Section 1, where the new language of note begins on page 4, line 2, amends AS 3805035A to require the Director of the Division of Mining, Land, and Water to submit an annual report to the legislature, primarily detailing aquatic farm and hatchery site leases pending with the department. Section 2, page 4, line 16, amends AS 3805070E by adding AS 3805083, which is the aquatic farm leasing statute, to the general leasing renewal section of law. This change allows the director to renew an aquatic farm lease under the general lease renewal procedure. A technical amendment on page 20 to 21 specifies which types of leases may be renewed under this procedure. Section 3, page 4, line 24, amends AS 3805083A by deleting the term or renew from the section of statute. This removes the requirement the renewal procedure for an aquatic farm or hatchery undergo the more detailed AS 3805945 adjudication process. Section 4, page 5, line 2, amends AS 3805083B by deleting the term or renewal from the section. This removes the renewal procedure from the aquatic farm leasing statute. Section 5, which is page 5, line 6, adds new subsections to AS 3805083, including new subsection G, which states the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources may renew an aquatic farm lease under the general leasing renewal procedure. New subsection H explicitly states ecotourism and educational purposes are allowed for aquatic farming and hatchery sites. And new subsection I explicitly prohibits the charging of an additional fee to aquatic farming and hatchery sites for the use of or passage across these sites. Section 6, page 5, line 15, adds a new section to uncodified law to require the Director of the Division of Mining, Land, and Water to submit an initial report to the legislature detailing aquatic farm and hatchery site leases pending with the department, estimates of economic impact if all these leases were granted, and recommendations by DNR and other state agencies to streamline the lease approval process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith, and thank you, Representative Story. Before we open it up for questions from committee members, I would just like to note that to help augment some of the questions, depending on input from our testifiers, we've got Christy Coles, Chief of Operations for Division of Mining, Land, and Water on the line, and also Alpheus Bullard, who is legal counsel and helped draft the bill with Representative Story's office. With that, any committee members' questions, Representative Fields?
Thanks. Through the chair, Representative Story, thank you so much for introducing this bill. I know I've heard from acquaintances who work in this industry about frustration with the 10-year lease renewal and the uncertainty around it. And I guess my first question is, it seems like your bill provides greater certainty. What was the thought process behind doing that versus just saying it's going to be a 25-year lease or some, 100% certain greater length of time where investors could recoup their investment and earn some profits?
I think it would be helpful if we talk to the staff online for the department, because they will tell you from their perspective, I believe, that they feel there should be some oversight at some point in time, but they are allowing the expedited renewal process, but they could tell you why they didn't want to go.
Got it. And And, Mr. Chairman, I would certainly appreciate hearing that, and I would also appreciate hearing from the staff. If they want, you know, that, it would an alternative be to have, say, a 2025-year lease, but also an opportunity for the department to intervene in those very rare cases where something goes wrong, say, mid-lease, because I think the intent here to provide certainty to investors is extremely important. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fields and Representative Story. Christy, if you're online, can you please chime in?
This is Christy Collis. For the record, good morning or good afternoon, everyone. For the record, this is Christy Collis. I am the Division Operations Manager for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. Representative through the chair. So the reason we don't do anything over 10 years is currently we do have it in regulation for a 10-year authorization. Also, anything over 10 years actually requires a survey for our leases. So many people don't want to spend the money on doing a survey and an appraisal, so many people opt to go with a 10-year authorization. We could move to a longer authorization if we were to maybe look at trying to deal with that statute, but that statute deals with all of our leases, so it's something that we would have to look at.
Representative Fields.
Thank you for that explanation. I guess my follow-up question would be, would it be feasible, and maybe this requires additional thought before you can give an answer right now, but would it be feasible to extend just these leases without doing violence to the other leases in the 10-year time frame and do so without requiring a survey initially, but perhaps bake in that requirement at some point during the lease so that the lessee can actually earn some money along the way and spread out those costs? Would that be feasible? Could we basically have all the good content in Representative Story's bill, but also extend those leases to give greater certainty to investors?
Representative through the chair, so I think it is possible. We would have to look at it, and of course we'll need to talk to legal about it and also look at our statutes to see where we would need to make those tweaks. The great thing with what Representative Story's bill will do is that it will give that more certainty of 20 years at least. You know, I mean, yes, of course, there will be things that we'll have to look at after 10 years, but without having to go through that full process of having a preliminary decision that goes out to public notice and then a final and the time that it takes to do that, it will just give a little bit more certainty to our farmers while we also look at maybe trying to get something. We have heard from farmers that they would like something longer in the initial term than 10 years, and that is something that we could be looking at further.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess in closing, I would like to pursue that, and if we can come to some consensus with the department and the sponsor of the bill, I would be interested in introducing an amendment to lengthen the initial lease term to say 15 or 20 years. Perhaps we require a survey by year 10. Anyway, I look forward to working with the department on that because I really want to see more investment in this area, and I've heard from investors about just how capital intensive these facilities are, and it's very reasonable to have a longer period to recoup that investment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fields. Any other questions from committee members? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. My recollection, Representative Story, is at the beginning of this process, what we were finding is Alaska's had a lot of mariculture leases, but they've largely been for shellfish. They've been for oysters and gooey ducks. And the further north you go, the slower they grow. So it might be year 5, 6, 8 before you have a commercially viable crop. But over the last 5 years, sort of the new growth in mariculture industry is kelp farms, so much faster growing processes. And without that lease renewal factor, what the department was finding is they could not process these new leases into commercial operation because they felt some obligation to the existing oyster farmers to renew theirs. And since they had to go through a complete renewal process that took on average 18 months, new people couldn't come into the other segment that's really sort of growing and flourishing in the industry. And the industry had not asked for any special or superseding any other regulation. They just noticed that ag leases could be renewed one time for another 10 years if you've been in good standing and you've been commercially viable, et cetera. And as most oyster farms that exist, if you're not in good standing by 10 years, you know it. Your crop hasn't matured. You haven't been able to send anything to market. But we potentially put them in conflict with other leases to start going, but treat our segment differently than we're treating other leases. But wasn't that the impetus? Is we're just trying to make sure that by we didn't have to put a lot of money, you didn't have to add a lot of new resources to processing leases if you just allowed the existing ones to renew in a in the renewal process that's offered for other leases. Therefore, the time of the staff to evaluate new leases going in, because in every one of them there's an extensive process of public notification, especially with these water leases. How are people using the water? And that changes in a 10-year period.
Through the chair, thank you, Rep. Hannon. That was a good explanation. And I think another thing that happens is when you're going through the process, you have to get back in line. So if you're going for your lease renewal, there might be some newer initial leases in front of you and you just don't pop to the front. You might have to wait longer and causing a problem for businesses. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Story and Representative Hannon. And I guess to the discussion of terms and bringing the mariculture industry to a level playing field of the rest of the agricultural industry, and how this bill satisfies that versus potentially something that might carve it out and give it like Representative Hannon was saying, a special designation. From what I hear in this discussion, not being an agricultural specialist, I guess, It brings a proper balance, I guess, to things as far as the different agricultural industries. So with that, any other questions from committee members before we move on to invited testimony? Representative Hopkins.
No, Mr. Chair, not a comment or not a question. I just wanted to say thank you for bringing this forward. Even up in Interior and Fairbanks, we have a lot of Alaska-grown mariculture products at some of our local stores up there trying to sell more Alaskan goods, whether it's land agriculture or sea agriculture. So thank you guys for bringing this forward and trying to keep that incentive going for a growing market. Thank you.
Can I ask another question of the department?
Representative Fields.
While we're on the subject of leases and 10 years for ag, I guess I would ask the department, is 10 years the best time frame, or would there be potentially similar benefits looking at extending the lease term for ag? I just don't know enough, but would appreciate the input.
Thank you, Representative Fields, and I think that was directed towards Christy Collis. Hope I'm pronouncing your last name right. Christy, can you speak to that as far as, I'm not sure if you heard Representative Fields' question.
Yes. For the record, this is Christy Collis again. Representative Fields, through the chair. We usually, with all of our leases, we can do anything up to 55 years. So Aquatic Farm, as I've stated, is down to 10 based to regulation that we have in place. And, of course, those regulations can be changed. So we could be evaluating these farms if we were to find a statutory change to consider longer terms. And I think that would have to be on a case-by-case basis. Usually, you know, if we are considering, a 25-year term for an authorization, that's part of the public notice that would go out. So if there were concerns over the term, that's something that could come up during that public notice period and through agency notice if there was a concern over a longer term beyond 10 years.
Thank you, Ms. Collis. Are there any other Representative Gillum, sorry.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Not really much of a question. It's more to a follow-up to Representative Fields. An oyster grower, you know, if they got to go out and by the time they get everything in place, by the time the oysters grows, we're big enough to start selling, and they could be 8-9 years into this, and then all of a sudden now they have to start all over. So extending, especially shellfish, you know, extending that lease to me would be a good thing. As far as the seaweed and stuff, it's a fast growing. You know, I can see an 8 or 10 year lease on that, but for shellfish, 10 years to me is just too short a time.
Can I ask another question?
Thank you, Representative Gillum. Representative Fields?
And maybe this question is for the sponsor, maybe for the department. As I've heard anecdotally, we do see growing growth where there's seaweed and, say, oysters side by side, and it actually has beneficial water quality impacts, as I understand it, because you've got reduction of, at least locally, acidification, and you've also got the filtration of the water. So, I mean, to me, there's this water quality benefit. Why wouldn't we want more of this? Am I recollecting that accurately when we have these combination of seaweed and oysters together? Don't remember the chemistry on it.
Representative Story.
Through the chair, thank you, Rep. Fields. I think hearing from the department would be good because they'd have a broader experience in that than I would.
Thank you, Representative Fields. Ms. Collis, not sure if you heard Representative Fields' questions.
I did, Chair. So this is Christy Collis, Chief of Operations for the Division of Mine, Land, and Water. Representative, through the chair, I'm not an expert in that. That's more of a fish and game. But in my time here with the department, I would say that that is true. We've heard that the oysters, they're actually also good for the water quality because of the fact that they filter. And then also the kelp is a good product for the water quality, but I don't have that scientific background to give you really good detail on that.
Thank you, Ms. Collis. Any other questions or comments before we go into invited testimony on HB 115? Seeing or hearing none, we'll move on to invited testimony. We've got three folks on the line with different entities. If you can please state your name for the record and begin with your invited testimony. We'll begin with Heather McCarty.
This is Heather McCarty, Mr. Chairman. Hello, Mr. Chairman. This is Heather McCarty. I'm the chair of the Mariculture Task Force. I'm assuming you can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you, Ms. McCarty.
Thank you very much. Members of the committee, yes, I'd like to speak on behalf of the Mariculture Task Force in support of you moving forward this bill. When the Mariculture Task Force was first put together, it was meant to represent industry interests as well as agency folks, scientists, tribal entities, and sort of the whole gamut of people who were interested in mariculture development. We started in 2016, and one of the first things we did was try to identify priorities as to what needed to be done to help move mariculture forward, help it develop in the state of Alaska and fulfill its potential for the communities of Alaska. And one of the things that we focused on was agency or sort of regulatory issues that needed to be streamlined and needed to be addressed to avoid any sort of blockages in the process for potential farmers and existing farmers. The lease process was, the DNR lease process was one of those areas. We had a number of fruitful discussions with DNR in which we learned exactly where the obstacles might lie and what might need to be changed to streamline that process. There was quite a backlog of requests at that time, I think a two-year backlog. One of the things that DNR did that was really appreciated was add people to start working through that backlog of lease requests, and that has really gotten a lot better. The sort of log jam has improved. However, this particular issue that is addressed in this bill was also identified. The whole renewal process probably doesn't need to take as long as the initial process. And so the task force heartily supports this bill and encourages you to pass it to committee. We also understand the need for the second important piece of the bill, which is the allowing of ecotourism on farm sites. I think later you might hear in testimony from people who have wanted to do that, and it is a great boon to their operations as well as being a good addition to the tourism spectrum in Alaska. I will point out that my expertise on the task force is originally in salmon and in crab, but you will be hearing from people, one of whom is the head of the Alaska Seafood Growers, Alaska Shellfish Growers Association, who are actually oyster farmers and can probably answer questions such as some of the ones that we've been hearing here in this in this session already. So I'm happy to answer questions about the task force's report, and thank you for taking this up.
Thank you, Ms. McCarty. Any questions from committee members from our invited testimony with Ms. McCarty? Seeing or hearing none. Thank you, Ms. McCarty. We'll move on to Eric Wyatt. Eric, if you can please put your name on the record and your affiliation and begin with your invited testimony.
Yeah. Hello. Hey, my name is Eric Wyatt. I'm president of the Alaska Shellfish Growers Association, and et cetera. I'm an active farmer, and I've been for more than 10 years. So I want to validate a lot, almost everything that you guys have been saying. It's really encouraging to hear all this positive speak about mariculture. And I've intimately been involved in renewal, and I hear about it. I also provide oyster seed from a big nursery to a lot of farmers and about their ongoing issue with renewal. So this is after 10 years, and they're actually active farms. They're making money, and some of them are trying to sell their operations that are up and running. Anyways, I like solutions that are as simple as possible and help us move forward, and this sounds like it. And the organization, you know, obviously approves it, and I personally do. And the ecotourism component also seems very common sense. It's just something that can be said. I'm here for any questions, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wyatt. Any questions from committee members? Seeing or hearing none, Representative Story, I'd like to extend our appreciation for taking the time to bring the bill before us, and especially for lining up the invited testimony, and Mr. Smith for helping us walk through the sectional analysis. We will hear public testimony on HB 115 now, so we'll open that up. Mr. LIO moderator, can you verify that we don't have anybody online for public testimony?
Roger, no one online that testifies.
Nobody online for public testimony. With that, we'll close public testimony. Now back to the regular, I guess, hearing on 115. Representative Story, before we move on the agenda, would you like to say anything, I guess, in closing of today's presentation on House Bill 115?
Thank you, Chair, and everyone for hearing the bill. I think it has a really great promise and potential for helping these businesses, and so I appreciate the support I heard today. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Story. Representative Gillum?
Yeah, thank you, through the Chair. Just have a quick question. They keep talking about, I guess, maritourism. Exactly what is that? I'm just curious.
Sorry, through the Chair, I didn't hear the word that you said, Rep. Gillum.
Maritourism or aquatourism? I guess they're taking a boat out and looking at the oyster farm. So I'm just kind of curious if that's what that is, or
yeah. Greg Smith could answer that for you.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greg Smith, staff to Representative Story, Representative Gillum through the Chair. Yes, you kind of were onto the right thought, and that it would be people would, the ones that I've heard about are people would come visit the farm. They may even do some tasting, go out to the floats. They've talked about some places have wanted to develop the uplands, so the shore, to again do some oyster tasting and product tasting and learn about the process. So essentially, yes, ecotourism or kind of mariculture tourism, to incorporate a tourism element into the production and growth of the product.
Okay, thank you. I kind of expected that's what it was, but I just wanted clarification exactly what it was. But yeah, my son, we go to Prince William Sound. There's a oyster farm there off of one of the islands, and he always makes a detour around to get oysters. So I said, I appreciate you bringing this up, Rep. Story. I think it's got a good chance of going through without any issues. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gillum. Any other committee members with any other questions? Seeing or hearing, Representative Hannon.
Well, mine's not really a question, but thank you. If I could just elaborate.
Those are comments.
comments. I have a bias. I love oysters. Have been I think I've been to 10 different Alaska oyster farms, and have a deep affinity for Americulture kelp growing product that's being grown in front of my property on Prince of Wales Island. And they're ones who specifically right now an oyster farm cannot, you could stop, you might be able to buy oysters if they got inspected, but they could not charge someone to come there to learn about. And so as that segment of variety of tourism interest in Alaska has grown, it's the whole idea of there are segments of travelers who not only just want to eat the product, they want to know a little bit about it, you know. So here in Southeast, we think of everything as a cruise ship half-day tour. You're either a half-day tour or a whole-day tour. And the mariculture companies have sort of said, we can give a really, you know, a full-day tour that's also on the water. You're in a boat, so you didn't go on one kind of tour and just stay in the boat, but you've got a little shoreside or floatside opportunity to learn, you know, the science of the industry. And especially with the kelp farms that are developing, you know, people are really, because kelp as a nutritional thing is, kelp and seaweeds are in thousands of products already. Mm-hmm. We just haven't been growing them here. And the ability, you know, to understand how many food products it touches and seeing it in its wild state in Alaska in pristine waters. I would also add that one of the, so there's a letter from Seagrove Company, who's one of the new largest kelp, it's currently the largest kelp farm on the west coast of the United States. They have one of the foremost scientists on mariculture working for them, a woman named Dr. Tiff Stevens. And she could give you the detailed chemistry between the oyster and specific kinds of kelp interactions, and writes extensively, and sort of the guru-ess in Alaska right now of all the science behind the kelp's oyster interactions and which species of kelp grow best to which oysters, if you really want to go there. Back to chemistry.
I'm not an oyster fan.
There you go. Seaweed, it's in all the ice cream.
Thank you, Representative Hannon. Representative Hopkins.
Thank you. And just to pile on with the good feelings, when I went to Hawaii a few years ago with my in-laws, there was a goat cheese farm that we went to and learned all about the goats and tested it at the end. And I don't think we have a ton of goats in Fairbanks, but this would be a wonderful opportunity for tourists to do just what you're talking about, Representative Hannon. Thank you.
You probably left them with 10 or 15 bucks, too, so.
We did, yeah, absolutely. We purchased some of the goat cheese and left with it and found out that when you buy goat cheese and it's got a, some of it has a stronger flavor, the stronger flavor has a reason that you would not expect as much, so keep an eye out for the stronger flavors of the goat cheese from variety to variety.
Don't make me point of order you. Continuing closing comments, Representative Crump.
I just, you know, want to throw my support behind this bill. Anything we can do for private business to make money, encourage people to do that, I'm all for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cronk. Representative Story, I'll extend the offer again since we've had such interesting discussion around the table, if you'd like to say anything else in closing.
Thank you, Chair. I just feel it's really good to hear your comments and know that we are very supportive of this industry because it is a very valuable one and really all about our resources that we have here and beautiful place that we live in the waters that we live around. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Story, and Mr. Smith, and those on the line who provided some invited testimony and insight regarding our mariculture industry. The plan is to bring House Bill 115 back up on Monday, and if you can have amendments to my office by Sunday at 1 p.m., that'd be much appreciated. Until then, we'll set the bill aside, and Representative Story and Mr. Smith, I'm sure we'll see you next Monday. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And I did want to add, I really do appreciate all the people who put their the hard work into their farms and their industry and their feedback that they've given. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Story. With that, we're going to pick back up on the discussion that we were having. I believe it was Wednesday regarding House Bill 81 and NPSLs. We had some amendments that we fielded that day that we've been able to work on over the last couple of days offline with the department. So let's move into that. online for questions, I believe. Mr. Meza is available. Mr. Fitzpatrick is available. And we were hoping to be joined by Ms. Nauman with Ledge Legal, but I'm not seeing her on the queue quite yet. With that, we'll bring up the amendment that we laid on the table, which was Representative Hannon's amendment in your packet should be labeled as number two. And make sure I got it right here. Yep. Representative Hannon, if you can just kind of remind us of the intent behind your amendments.
Thank you. Through the chair, this new section that is being added to the bill about investment of capital to encourage or bring into production, I believe should be limited to the net profit sharing agreements, which there are 26 from the data that DNR gave to us, versus opening it up to the thousands of leases that have royalties, because of course every lease has a royalty component, and that we've heard from the department that royalties have a variety of ways to petition and prove up that they may need to renegotiate a royalty, but that the bill was designed to try and get net profit sharing agreements that have not been producing into production and give them some of those. They could still use a net profit sharing agreement lease, could use the A, B, or C of the existing statute or the additional D as the mechanism to be part of the evaluation of what they need to do to change that. And remembering that one of the final sign-offs on the process of changing those agreements requires a legislative oversight, and that our legislative finance division, whether doing it themselves or having to contract for experts, probably is not prepared to provide that oversight of thousands of royalty leases, but the handful of 26 at the most, probably only a handful in any given fiscal year, of net profit sharing agreements, I believe remains a doable task. And I would like to support changes that encourage the net profit sharing leases into production, but I don't want to create such a broad change in the law that we are talking about thousands of royalty leases being renegotiated in any one year, or probably not in one year, but the course of an economic evaluation. So.
Thank you, Representative Hannon. And I guess before we open up for committee comments or questions, Mr. Mazur or Mr. Fitzpatrick, can you provide, from the administration standpoint, kind of your opinion on the amendment and clarify what kind of actionable changes it makes?
Certainly, Chair Petkutuk, and this is Ryan Fitzpatrick with DNR for the record. I think just from an overview point, the effect of this amendment would be to take the new scenario for modification. That would be the new subsection D for attempts to prolong the economic life of an oil or gas field for which capital expenditures might be required in order to extend the life of that field. It would, number one, it would restrict that that scenario to only the 26 net profit share leases that the department identified previously in the presentation. Number two, I think the effect of the change would also go to the fact that of those 26 leases, the only component of the leases that could be modified would actually be the net profit share component, not necessarily the royalty component, but also is included with those leases. I think from the department's perspective, I think that could pose a problem for the purpose behind offering this this potential new scenario. Number one, I think the original idea behind the new scenario was to allow the potential for where we see royalty-only leases that might be in the situation where the field or pool might be at risk of shutting down, but could
could have an extended life if additional capital expenditures were made. I think the intent was to allow the modification of royalties in those situations. I think, second of all, for the net profit share leases, if they found themselves in this situation, it's also possible that by limiting the modification just to the net profit share component, that may, in certain circumstances, be insufficient to create an economic incentive for those capital expenditures. And so we could run into a situation where if there was the ability to modify royalty in addition to net profit share, that might allow the capital expenditures to become economic and be able to extend the life of that field or pool. But if the modification were restricted just to the net profit share component, then we might be in a situation where the modification might not be sufficient to make those capital expenditures economic.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzpatrick. I believe we had Representative Hopkins and Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to speak in support of this amendment, specifically because of the title of the bill is where my initial support for it comes. The title of the bill deals only with the modification of a net profit share lease. The entire presentation, as in-depth and educational as it was from Mr. Meza, talked about the 26 net profit share leases that are out there and how you can change the net profit share numbers within those leases to make the field more economic. And I think that, you know, if we want to address the royalty opportunities for this scenario D, royalty modifications for the scenario D, I think we should hear another bill from the department so we can go into a robust discussion and understanding of what those impacts would be. But I don't think that we've had those opportunities nor that presentation over the last two or three meetings or so from the department. So I think this is absolutely critical to rein in the bill to the information that we've received, plus the title of the bill, and from my understanding throughout the entire discussion, what the intent of the bill would be. If I'm wrong on the intent of the bill, then I think the department should offer a more substantial amendment, including a title change, before we go forward with anything that would be dealing with royalty changes for new scenarios outside of the discussions that we've had in this committee and the opportunity we've had to make to ask questions. So for what we're dealing with today, I think this is absolutely critical to make sure that we keep the sideboards on what the legislative authority and capacity is for our taxing responsibilities as this branch of government. If we allow too many changes to the tax system outside of what we put in place with Senate Bill 21 and with the net profit share leases in place, I think that would be an abdication of our responsibility, and I think this amendment allows us to protect that and go forward with the information that we have and not let things run too far. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hopkins. Representative Hopkins.
Oh, Mr. Chair, all
yeah,
time.
No, all good. Representative Fields.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just want to align myself with the comments of my friend from Fairbanks. I do support the bill limited to the modified leases. I don't support it with the potentially sweeping impacts, including revenue impacts on royalties, and therefore I support the amendment. And just to be clear, I can't support the underlying bill without Representative Hannon's amendment and without my subsequent amendment to an amendment to make sure that we are appropriately encouraging production and capital investment. Just want to make sure that what the bill says is consistent with what Representative Hopkins said is the title and the stated intent of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fields. Any other committee comments on amendment number two from Representative Hannon? Seeing or hearing any comments, I guess, in the back and forth discussion that we've had as representatives, Mr. Fitzpatrick or Mr. Meza want to provide any comments before we take the amendment to a vote?
Chair Putka, this is Ryan Fitzpatrick again from DNR for the record. Obviously, this is a policy call that is before the legislature, and so, of course, is the legislature's prerogative. Just want to note that if you go back to the department's presentation on slides 21 and 23, that the I believe those slides and you know the intent of those slides was to convey that the new scenario was intended to apply both to royalty modification and to net profit share modification scenarios, and so I think you know we did make an attempt to note that, and I know there was a lot of information, and so just wanted to apologize if that got lost in the amount of information that was included in that that presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzpatrick. And I just, sorry, I guess just a clarifying statement as far as the sideboards that that Amendment Number 2 puts on HB 81 in correlation with the presentation page number that you referenced, 21, those sideboards would limit that authority of the DNR Commissioner as outlined on page 21 in Item 1A.
Chair, again, this is Ryan Fitzpatrick, DNR, for the record. I think the impact of the amendment would not necessarily, if we're looking at page 21 of the presentation, it wouldn't impact 1A. I believe it would impact 2A. And so the item on 2A says that among the other changes in HB 81, that it creates an additional qualifying scenario for modification of either royalty or net profit share leases, and then sort of describes the scenario in D of the committee substitute, that is for producing pools where incremental production requires incremental capital expenditures, and the absence of the modification would otherwise be uneconomic. But you know, the attempt, I think, was our attempt in describing that, in listing that modification scenario would apply to both royalty or net profit share leases. And then, again, I think on slide 23, the new scenario is described on slide 23 as well as applying to both royalty and to net profit share modifications.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzpatrick. Any other comments from committee members on Amendment Number 2? Seeing or hearing none, on our Wednesday meeting, Representative Welger had brought forth the original objection to Amendment Number 2. Our office, in his absence today, our office coordinated with him that it would be fine to lift his objection. And with that, does anyone else object to the adoption of Amendment Number 2? Seeing or hearing no objection, the amendment has been adopted. Going back to the list of amendments for HB 81, we've got the original amendment that DNR proposed, in which I carried. Let me find it here. Losing myself here. Actually, we've got an amendment from Representative Fields.
A clarifying question, Mr. Chairman. Are you offering Amendment 1 and then I offer an amendment to the amendment? Or is
correct.
I will stand by.
We're going to bring back up the amendment that we put on the table on Monday, which was Amendment Number 1 by Representative Fields. And offline, Representative...
Brief
it is. Clarify on the record. Back on the record, and I guess to clarify where we're at, we addressed Amendment Number 1, put it on the table, we're bringing it back now, and there's been a proposed amendment to that amendment. Offline, Representative Fields did some work, and to that, Representative Fields, I guess, will bring back Amendment Number 1 and then entertain a motion to amend the amendment.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I will move Amendment Number 1. To Amendment Number 1.
Thank you, Representative Fields. And I guess I object for discussion purposes. Mr. Representative Fields, can you speak to the amendment?
You bet. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I want to thank you for collaborating and taking the time to try to get this language as tight as possible. I also want to thank Laura Boomershine, Johnny Mesa, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Emily Nauman for assisting and thinking through the best way to craft this language. The amendment to the amendment simply ensures that we're maximizing production from these fields by ensuring that we make capital investments to prolong the life of the fields. If either capital investment or modified lease terms could extend the life of the field, let's make sure that we are getting that capital investment either first or in conjunction with modified leases, but not allowing reduced lease terms to come at the expense of capital investment and production. That pretty much summarizes it, and thank you again for allowing the time to work through this with everyone involved.
Thank you, Representative Fields. And before we open up the floor to committee members for questions, can we have some comments from the Department of Natural Resources, either Mr. Fitzpatrick or Mr. Mesa?
Yes, Chair. Hello again. This is Ryan Fitzpatrick from DNR, and say I do appreciate the Representative Fields' office for taking time to include us in assisting and preparing this amendment. From operational point of view, I think the impact of this amendment would be for any modification that would be contemplated under the new scenario D, that it would require that in addition to a finding that the capital expenditures are necessary to prolong the life of the field, that the modification would also require a finding that the capital expenditures would result in the maximization of production from the field or pool, and that there would also be a condition on the modification that the, in order to receive the benefits of the modification, that the capital expenditures would actually have to be made. And so if there was a scenario where a producer presented an application for modification and outlined a scenario for capital investments, if the capital investments were not actually made after a royalty modification were granted, then the royalty modification would be automatically rescinded or considered void. As I believe Mr. Mesa had presented earlier, one of the royalty modification applications that the department approved some number of years ago for the Nuna development within the Agroric unit, the department included in that royalty modification a condition that the capital investments contemplated there for new production actually needed to be sanctioned or made in order for the royalty modification to continue in effect. In that particular instance, the new investments were not made, and the royalty modification therefore lapsed of its own accord. And so I think the intent behind this amendment is that a similar condition be imposed on any modification under the new scenario D, given that that's the department's practice and the modifications that we granted. I think the department is okay with this amendment. I think we'd support this.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzpatrick. Any other committee members' questions or comments on the amendment to the amendment? Seeing and hearing none, I'll remove my objection. Are there any further objections from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, amendment number one to amendment number one has passed the committee. And that brings us to the amendment number one, which is now amended. And I believe on Wednesday, Representative Hopkins had an objection to amendment number one, and that's where we'll pick the discussion back up. With the understanding that Representative Hopkins maintains his objection.
I'll go ahead and withdraw my objection, Mr. Chair.
Any other objections to amendment number one as amended? Seeing or hearing no objections, amendment number one as amended has passed the committee. And with that, are there any other questions or comments on HB 81 as amended two or three times? From committee members, seeing or hearing, Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I wanted to thank the department for actually bringing this this bill forward. We certainly learned a lot in the School of Johnny, as Representative Hannon described it. I myself know now a lot more about net profit share leases, and I also want to thank them for working with Representative Fields to make sure that those capital expenditures do happen. That tightening that up to make sure that both sides are working together to develop Alaska's natural resources and fill taps, I think, is absolutely key. You know, I still have some concerns about the bill overall. I want to support it going forward to make sure that we don't inhibit the opportunity to get more production going as we need it here during Alaska's current fiscal situation. I want to make sure, and also I'll work with our members in finance to make sure that this bill doesn't make profitable production more profitable, but would allow for bringing fields that would not otherwise be developed online, and making sure that we have that shared success with our producers that has been such a good for Alaska over the last 50 years or so. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Look forward to moving this bill out and working with our finance members to make it even more gooder. Thank you.
More gooder. You saw Hannon perk up right away, the teacher in her. Thank you, Representative Hopkins. Representative Schrage.
Yeah, thank you. And through the chair, I just also wanted to quickly thank the Department of Natural Resources, specifically Mr. Meza and Mr. Fitzpatrick, for making themselves available yesterday to discuss some of these amendments in the bill, extending well past the scheduled time. So I just really appreciate their generosity with their time in answering all of my questions. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schrage, and you know, along the same lines as Schrage and Hopkins, just want to extend my appreciation for ex-Representative Hannon Cole at the School of Johnny. Looking forward to any other opportunities in the future to attend the School of Johnny, maybe on other topics like royalties or something like that. So, with that, any other comments before we move on with the meeting? And I'll extend an offer to Mr. Meza or Mr. Fitzpatrick as far as closing comments.
Mr. Chair, this is Johnny Meza, and I want to thank the members of the committee for their consideration of this bill and the opportunity for both my colleague Ryan Fitzpatrick and I to make a presentation to you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. Mr. Fitzpatrick?
Chair Ryan Fitzpatrick, DNR, for the record, and I'll just echo my colleague Johnny Mays's thanks to the committee, both for the time and the consideration for allowing us to come before you to present this bill and to offer the presentation that we've been afforded the opportunity to do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzpatrick, and to anyone else that provided insight from the department as we worked through this, and not to forget our legislative legal service, who's listening intently, I'm sure, on the line. I want to extend our gratitude for your willingness to work with us to put the sideboards that we wanted to on it. With that, I just want to clarify that the plan is to move this bill out of committee on Monday once we were able to clean up the get a clean copy and the committee substitutes lined up, and we're also going to hear on Monday continuation of HB 115 that we heard earlier before us from Representative Story, and as a reminder, any amendments for that, please have them Sunday 1 p.m. To my office so we can incorporate them in Monday's meeting. With that, we'll look forward to seeing you all on Monday at 1 o'clock.